Donna Snyder is from right here in El Paso, Texas, and she is probably one of the most active poets I've ever met in my life. She runs the Tumble Words Project, which is a weekly gathering of poets and writers. They do workshops and they do readings and they do events all over town. She is an activist. She is bilingual. She is an amazing community member and fantastic poet. And finally, we get to see an entire collection of her poems with this new book, Poemas ante el Catafalco, Grief and Renewal. And we are very excited to have her on the show. I have deep respect for this woman. And Donna, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Hi, Danielle. It's so good to be here. Thank you.
Well, you know, Donna, when I came to El Paso and started to get introduced to the literary scene, your name was everywhere. You are probably one of the most active poets in El Paso. Even now, you run Tumble Words, and tell us a little bit about, before we get to your book, which is really a beautiful book.
Thank you so much.
Before we get to that, tell us a little bit about you and El Paso, because you can't talk about El Paso poetry without your name coming up.
Thank you so much. Well, I moved here from Las Cruces, where I was working at Centro Legal Campesino, the Farmworker Legal Aid, but right before I had moved here, I had started Tumble Words Project with a little seed money from New Mexico Arts Division, and we met at Concilio Campesino in San Miguel, which is on Highway 28 between Las Cruces and El Paso, and just would get together and practice writing and reading aloud, and it was everyone from very well-established writers. In fact, that first season of presenters included Denise Chavez, Debbie Nathans, Willibaldo Delgadillo, some really illustrious people, but the concept was just to meet, practice writing, and read aloud. And it just sort of took off like Topsy. It's been 20 years now.
20 years.
Yeah, well, we're into our 20th year of weekly workshops, too. When I say 20 years, people think that's like maybe once a month or once every month, but it's weekly. And for the last 12 years, we haven't even had any funding. And yet, without any grant money and just passing the hat and for donations, we still have Pulitzer Prize nominees drive all the way from California to do workshops and performances for free.
Wow.
It's amazing, really, how the stretch has been. We've had presenters from Jamaica, Chile, Peru, Cuba, Hungary, and then all across the United States. And they just come and share their creativity with those who happen to show up. It's not a membership group. It's not like the same people are there every week.
Anyone can show up.
Everyone can show up.
And it's every Saturday?
Uh-huh. From 12:45 to 2:45 at Memorial Park Library, right in Central. It's super easy to get to. And it's free. I mean, we take donations to pay the presenter for their time. And then we occasionally have performance events, especially around April and May, a lot of things. And we've had a couple of anthologies come out with people from across the country in it and Mexico. So it's been really a gratifying and fulfilling project.
The name itself, Tumble Words, is really a beautiful name for where we are. I mean, we are in the desert. But, you know, and that word represents, you know, not only the literary heritage of El Paso, and I don't know who came up with that word. I don't know if it was you, but it's brilliant, choice. But in many ways, it represents you. I mean, you are from this land. If you don't mind me saying it, you are a white woman, but your Spanish is great.
Thanks. Well, necesito hablar un poquito cuando trabajo con los campesinos, que no, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, so many of the years that I've been a lawyer, all of my clients and all of my colleagues were Mexicanos or Chicanos, and you just pick it up a little by little. I'm really not fluent. I can speak a lot better than I can understand, which is dangerous. Usually it's the other way around.
Oh, that is unusual. Yeah. That is crazy.
But I can speak like entire paragraphs and pages in Spanish. I have a good vocabulary in Spanish. But then as soon as people start talking back to me, you know, one of my first jokes in Spanish was, you know, if I say it now, I'll probably butcher it, but in Espanol, estoy budista, no tengo pasado, no tengo futuro. I live in the present moment at all times because I don't have my tenses down at all.
Well, that's a good place to be, in the present all the time.
That's
something
lesson
we can learn. I think there's some Eastern languages, you know, so-called Eastern, because, you know, East-West dichotomy is probably really not very accurate. But there's some Asian languages where there are no past, there are no present. There's just only present, you know, and you modify it by, you know, what you're talking about. And that's a good place to be, in the moment. Donna, are you a Chicana writer?
You know, last year I was invited to be a featured reader at the Chicana Pride Literary Event. And I was telling my husband, now, who's now deceased, but I told Mario, I got invited to be a featured reader at the Chicana Pride event. Georgina Perez invited me. It was, and I was thrilled. And he says, oh, Donna, well, you know, you're a practicing Chicana. Well, yeah. It's just many years of being in the region. And an old friend, Roberto Chavez, told me once that, well, you know, I was thinking about, Donna, and you're from the Texas Panhandle, and we tend to think of the Texas Panhandle as being, right, you know, some faraway place. But if you looked at it from a satellite, the Texas Panhandle is La Frontera, you know.
Right.
It is all the same. The Texas Panhandle, I've lived my whole life in the Texas Panhandle, northern New Mexico, Austin, Texas, Fort Worth, El Paso. Wow. And so I am una fronteriza bien hecha, I like to say.
Yeah, and you know, the fact is, the word Chicano does not denote an ethnicity.
No.
You know, there's a lot of Mexicanos in El Paso that would not call themselves Chicanos.
And even more in northern New Mexico,
yeah,
trust me.
Exactly. And in fact, I imagine most people in El Paso, even though we're like 80% Latino, I would say that there's probably, you know, very few Chicanos. And
right.
So it's a term of self-identification.
Absolutely.
And it identifies with the movement. It identifies
Absolutely.
With a, you know, not a fixed ideology, but there is ideological aspect of it. So, you know, if I were including a list of Chicano writers from El Paso, you would definitely be on that list.
Well, thank you. I'm honored. Just recently, I was responding to interview questions in writing, and I mentioned that, you know, I'm not academically trained. I never studied poetry or even literature. I took one literature course in all of my college days and never took creative writing. It just sort of came about. And then I was most influenced, and my poetry was most influenced by El Movimiento de Chicano. You know, I mean, Chicano y Chicano writers and activists, not just poets and writers, but also activists, because for a long, long time I have been associated with the movement in different respects as a handmaiden for the movement. And I was just extremely influenced by those writers. Ana Castillo and Denise Chavez are old colleagues of mine. You know, I was in Ana Castillo's Sunday No Mass writing workshop when she lived in Albuquerque. And
wow.
I was the token non-raza. You know, everybody else was either Mexicana or Chicana. And Ana was gracious enough to let me join in. And then one of my earliest mentors was Denise Chavez as well. And then my viejo Jesus, in Paz Descansa, who died, I guess, 13 years ago, 14 years ago now, he and Denise were old friends. He acted in her very first play produced in Albuquerque, Hecho in Mexico. So there are all these connections, you know. It's like we're all cousins, right?
Right, absolutely.
Todos son primos.
You mentioned Denise Chavez and Ana Castillo, who, of course, are well known for their fiction.
Oh, see.
For their fiction. Who are your poetry influences?
Well, I've got many poems about Pablo Neruda, you know. Blame It on Neruda is one of my poems, actually. And it came from Joan Logie, a woman in Santa Fe, a very, very gifted poet. And at the time I lived in Santa Fe and started writing, I was considered a fiction or prose writer. But I was being surrounded by really good poets like Miriam Sagan, Joan Logie, Judith Hill. And so they influenced me. But when Joan Logie handed me a book, a bilingual book of Neruda and Vallejo, and it literally changed my life. I had no idea poetry could be that way or sound that way, and it super influenced me. And, well, now I've encountered and known. I've had a really gifted life of encountering and meeting and knowing so many good writers. But I'm very much influenced by Latin American writers. Gabriel Garcia Marquez is a prose writer, but he's so poetic.
Yeah.
One of my favorite prose writers is Eduardo Galeano, but his history books are poetry.
Right, absolutely, you know? And everything's so pithy. He does these little paragraphs that
distilled,
just blow you away. Yeah.
Exactly, an entire century's worth of history and little vignettes like that. But Lorca is a huge influence on me, just the use of colors and the passion and the rhythms and the music. And
See, you are a Chicano writer because, you know, most Chicano poets, those are their influences. You know, I'm talking to Donna Snyder, and her book just came out, Poema Santo del Catafalco, Grief and Renewal. Let's talk about this book. Reading this book, you know, I'm thinking this must have been the hardest book in the world to write. There's a lot of pain in this book. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, there's a lot of renewal, too. But tell us a little bit about how this book came about.
A catafalco is a funeral bureau or a casket. And so the title, which my publisher came up with the idea, the whole concept of the book and the title.
You mean the publisher approached you and says, you should,
yes.
That is amazing.
I know.
Who does that happen to, Donna?
Right?
Who does that happen to?
Yeah, well, you can either say I'm lucky or you can say I've been paying my dues for about 30 years. Yes, Will Wynn, which is actually his nom de slam, as he calls it. He's originally from Ecuador by way of Uruguay, immigrated to the U.S. when he was 18, I think, and lives in New York City. Very active in the spoken word scene in Manhattan and Brooklyn and whatnot. And he had followed my writing online for almost a decade. And then he saw me read twice in New York City. And he decided to start up this little bitty baby press. I think most of the prior books have been digital even before this one. And he said, I want to publish a book for Donna through a mutual friend. He sent me that message. And then last October when my husband Mario died, Will, whose real name is Guillermo Echenique, he goes by Will, he called me up to express his condolences. And in the conversation learned that, well, yes, Mario dropped dead at 54 in October of last year, completely suddenly and unexpectedly. And then 13 years before that, my longtime buen compañero, Jesus Guzman, who was there with me with the farm workers and many, many issues and the founding of Tumblewords. And he fell to his death at age 44, and that was a devastating blow. And in that same time frame then, between those two framing deaths, my father died. And someone told me, oh, Donna, everybody's father dies. It's like, well, yeah, but I only have one.
Yeah,
right? But
if you hear the sound of beads, Donna is playing with this wonderful – no, it's okay. It's you. It's the wonderful bracelet with all these different beads and charms and stuff. No, but that's great that you play with it. That's fine. I just want to let them know what it is,
oh,
just in case.
Thank you for bringing it to my attention, too. Well, anyway, in that same time period, not only did my viejo die, my father die, my husband die, and, you know, my viejo and my husband.
What a year.
Yeah, it was 13 years, but these were, you know, very, as Jesus would call it, amor de los apaches, he called it, because very passionate relationships. And so that kind of adds to the fraughtness of it. But then also, two brothers-in-law died. Two cuñados died in that same period. My 16-year-old dog died in that same period.
Oh, that's tough.
Two very close friends died in that same period. And about five or six colleagues, poets and lawyers, died, three of them by suicide, all within that same 13-year period. And I'm not sure if any of those hurt worse than that 16-year-old dog.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so when Will heard that, he came up with this concept of poems in front of the casket. Catafalco, the English equivalent, the cognate is catafalque from the French, and it means funeral bier or casket, you could say. So it's like poems in front of the casket.
Right, right.
And it was Will's concept to have the grief and renewal. He came up with the title and the concept. And
wow, that's first, amazing.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And at first, I just couldn't respond. I was very immobilized by grief. I could do was write.
I remember when your husband died, how really it really impacted you so much.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah.
And the community, you know, his work is on all the walls of El Paso. He's taught in the Chicano Studies textbook, used across the country, you know, his artwork and his biography. And he's had a big influence on many, many, many younger artists in this community because, I mean, he painted his heritage. I mean, he painted the Virgin of Guadalupe over 50 times.
Wow.
In about 30
years.
So
a lot of those, in El Paso, you drive around, you see a lot of Virgens all over the walls and freeway underpasses, and he did some of those.
He did a lot of them. There's a very famous one, an icon that he painted twice from scratch across from Isleta Mission in Isleta.
Oh, that's his?
That's his.
Oh, that's
right,
awesome.
It had decayed. It's an old 100-year-old adobe, and he found some people to pay workers to restucco, you know, chicken wire, todo, and he people say he restored that mural, but he painted it twice from scratch.
Wow. That's great.
And many other really prominent murals in the region.
So this book was a suggestion of the editor, and I think the book, you know, grew out of something, you know, not just an editor. These poems were going to happen. These are inevitable poems. When you feel grief, does poetry help you interact with it or help you settle it?
Definitely. I mean, I really couldn't do anything after Mario died productive other than write.
Wow.
I couldn't do anything. My bills would go unpaid with money in the bank, you know?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But you could write, and you would sit down and write. And the result is these poems that we have. Were all of them written for this book, or was some written before?
No. Some of them were written when my father died and when, you know, in times past when different people died. And then when I was coming to the renewal part and looking, as I was looking through the poems for poems, my old book poems for poems about people who had died, I found poems that I'd written at particularly productive or happy times in my life, very creative times in my life. So they were very effusive and energetic. And I chose some of those. And then a number, I would say probably at least half of the poems in that book were written since Mario died. And maybe about half before. Because a number of them, it's not just about personal bereavement. It's also about the impact on me as, you know, as Jesus used to say, I'm muy sensible, ella. You know, she's so sensitive. But poems about catastrophes and losses that affected the community as a whole, you know, the Fukuyama catastrophe in Japan that has implications to this day in here and New Orleans and farm workers getting locked up and left to die in the middle of the desert in the back of a truck. Ezequiel Hernandez, that goat herd who was shot to death in Redford. Mr. Bird, who was drugged to his death in Jasper, Texas. I think that those things happened before you moved here, maybe. So
no, I remember them, though. They had got national attention. So I imagine I've had the experience sometimes when I'm going into a really painful place, you know, as I'm writing, I'm going into that landscape. Because when we write, in a sense, we're entering a landscape of the imagination, although that landscape is just as real as the physical landscape. And I imagine some of these must have been very difficult to go into. But you did it. And the result is this fantastic book.
Well, thank you so much.
I always ask poets this. I'm fascinated with this whole idea. How did you decide the order of the poems? Did you print them out and put them all over the house?
Pretty much.
Did you enjoy it?
I was very intimidated by the process to begin with. But first I just did a word search in my computer for death, basically, or dying and things. And then as I would run across those poems, I'd print them out and then I spread them out all over the room, basically, and it's kind of like playing cards. To tell you the truth, the first time I edited a chapbook, I actually Googled, how do you edit a chapbook? Because I'd never edited anyone's chapbook before. And I ran across, I think it was by an editor from Alice James or something, and she said, you know, you just kind of like spread them out and you go through them several times. And so I think of it almost like reading the cards, you know, doing tarot, you know, you just like,
oh, I love that.
Shuffle them all.
I love that image.
Shuffle them all and then just keep reshuffling them. You know?
Yeah, because a book is, you know, like Stephen King says, a book is magic that fits into the hands.
Oh, good.
You know,
great
and so that I love that image.
Very oracular. And
in a sense, you know, this is what I'm doing right now with my collection of poems. I'm spreading the poems out.
I'm looking forward to them.
And I'm going like this and I'm going like that. And in a sense, when we move the pages, it's almost as if we're moving stars in the universe.
Which
we're moving planets because we're creating a universe with every book. And and this book is fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask, we're running out of time, I'd like to ask if you would read a poem.
Sure. Thanks.
This is Donna Snyder reading from her new book, Poemas ante el Catafalco, Grief and Renewal.
Well, when I was interviewed live on television a few weeks ago, I picked a sad one and cried on
stage.
So I'm going to pick one from The Renewal.
Well, you can cry on our show anytime you want.
This is called Minnow Slip of the Finger, and it is one of the newer poems written in the last year, I think, last year or so. When the artist fell in love, remembering became easier. The way her face looked before he had ever seen it. The minnow slip of his finger across her speckled wrist. Cinnamon flakes on cream skin, flush of flesh, humidity sudden in the desert heat, the monsoon season of the wet country here in the dry country, this country of drought where death is nearer than life. The old woman appearing like a large baby draped in blankets the color of eggs and wet sand, the soles of her feet neglected into rust. Look at the desiccating bush. The nopales broad and flat and fat, easily thought dead. Flaccid in the hands of a brutal sun, crushed in its grip, limp crepe. But there, amidst all that death, the ruby flash of tuna, waiting for the beard of thorns to be trimmed, waiting for the teeth, the dripping sweet.
Wow. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Donna J. Snyder. Thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you so much for letting me be here.